I'm Dee Dee.
And I'm Jen. And this is
Murder on My Street. And it's raining and on fire. Okay, Jen, what street are we on tonight?
Tonight, we are at 42nd Street and Marquardt Lane in West Des Moines, Iowa, on September 5th, 1982, and we will be discussing the unsolved disappearance of Johnny Gosch.
Okay.
This is a crazy case. It's heartbreaking. There are so many rabbit holes to fall down. And when you research it, it's extremely hard to pick out the kernels of truth and stick to the facts.
Hmm.
This may end up being two parts. We'll see how this shakes
out. Okay.
But let's start with Johnny. Johnny was the youngest of three children born to John and Noreen Gosch. He was a popular boy who liked football and karate. He loved the outdoors, and he enjoyed going to the Iowa State Fair. Johnny also liked to buy his loved ones the perfect gift. When Johnny was 11, he got a paper route, like a lot of our friends and family did at that age in the 80s. Back when the paper was delivered to your doorstep every Johnny wanted a dirt bike. And this was what we did when we wanted things in the 80s. We got jobs for them.
Yeah.
And paperboy, I think, was one of the few things that they could do.
Right. As kids.
Right.
Something that you do before school or definitely in the summer or whatever.
Exactly. Anyone who grew up in the 80s will remember Johnny was one of the first to appear on the back of a milk carton.
Oh my God.
His was a face that haunted us. And it was the reason my brothers were no longer allowed to do paper routes once mom got word of what happened.
Oh my God.
We'll come back to the crazy 80s later. So let's talk about September 5th.
Okay.
Johnny got up before dawn on September 5th. Suddenly, I can't remember what fucking. Jesus, Jen. It's the smoke.
Oh, no.
It's the fire.
It's getting to you.
It's in my brain.
I'm overcome.
Johnny got up before dawn on September 5th. He grabbed the wagon that he used to tote his papers around.
Okay.
He took his Dachshund Gretchen. Aww. And he headed out to pick up the papers to do his route. What would happen is there was always like a truck and they would come to a central location and the paper boys would meet there.
Right.
And they would get the papers that they needed for their route.
Right.
So that's what Johnny was heading out to do. Now, his dad usually went with him on Sundays because it's a heavier paper day.
Yeah.
Growing up in the 80s, my grandparents got the paper daily because my grandma didn't work and she liked to read it every day.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But both my parents worked, so they really only had time for the Sunday paper.
Mm-hmm.
It was a relaxing day.
Right.
So that was the good one. That was the one that was stuffed with like the comics and with coupons and with the ads.
Yes.
So our moms would know what was on sale and where they were shopping and all.
Exactly.
This particular Sunday morning, Johnny got up at 5:45 a.m. and he set out without waking his dad up. Now, times vary depending on the articles and the interviews. But sometime between 7 and 7:45 a.m., neighbors started calling the Goshes.
Okay.
Where's my paper?
My paper, yeah.
Johnny had a reputation for being prompt. He was so good at slinging papers that he had already won an airplane ride over Des Moines, and he'd only been doing this a year. I mean, this wow. kid was motivated. And it wasn't like Johnny to miss a house.
Mm-hmm.
Several were calling.
Oh, my God.
His parents just thought maybe he'd overslept, so they went to his room to wake him up. But Johnny wasn't in his room.
Oh, God.
And then Gretchen came home.
Oh, no.
You can imagine the utter panic when Johnny's dad found his wagon 2 blocks away full of papers.
Shit.
And no Johnny.
The horror. The horror.
Immediately, Noreen, his mom, called West Des Moines police, who told her they had to wait 72 hours to file.
No. How old is he?
12.
No.
Remember, this is the 80s, so we have a lot of kids who are listed on the Charlie Project as runaways, who then the case 30 years later gets corrected because clearly they weren't runaways.
12. He's 72 hours. Why? Okay.
That's how it was back then. And they insinuate that Johnny was just a runaway and he'll be back.
Because they didn't want to put it in the time.
I don't think they really
cared.
Okay. That.
Didn't give a shit.
It's just a kid. Kids run away.
Be back and later.
I get that a lot of parents panic. I get that. This was the 80s, and when you couldn't find your child, you called the police right away. So there were a lot of calls that they would get where the kids were just at a friend's house and not telling mom or dad. And maybe you get enough of those calls that you think that, oh, this is just another
one.
Paperboy ditched his route in the morning. He'll be found. He forgot. He's, you know, playing Atari.
At a friend's house.
Like, they're just...
Except it's not like him.
That's the thing. Not only is it not like them, they start talking to other paper boys and are hearing things that make them know that something is very, very wrong. But the cops won't budge. Run away. Valuable time is lost waiting 48 hours, waiting 72 hours, waiting 24 hours. You have to be on this shit.
Right.
Immediately.
They don't call it the first 48 for nothing.
So as Noreen and John Gosch are talking to the paper boys, they're finding that a man in a blue Ford Fairmont was talking to Johnny, driving next to him, talking to him as Johnny was like walking towards the truck to get the papers. And they think this isn't really normal because it's 5:45 a.m. on a Saturday morning.
Right.
On a Sunday morning. And you don't usually see people up that early.
Mm-hmm.
Johnny calls the only other adult around there over. There was a kid whose dad was helping him that morning. Uh-huh. And apparently Johnny was feeling uncomfortable. So he asked John Rossi if he can help the guy
mm-hmm.
and give him directions.
Right.
The interviews with John Rossi, they say it's weird because I've read some paper accounts of this dude like slurring his words or whatever, but mm-hmm. if you listen to John Rossi's interview, he says the guy was like, I shouldn't laugh, but his description of him, he was on a lot of caffeine. Oh. He seemed like he was ready to go.
Like really jittery.
Right. So I think maybe it was his polite way of trying to say he thought the dude was like coked out or something.
Yeah.
Meth was also a thing that was like
speed off back definitely then. Speed.
Yeah, for sure. So it could have been he could have been on any of that. He seemed really agitated though. And that Fairmont will be spotted by several people.
Mm-hmm.
There will be another account of another paper boy where he says someone stepped out, a taller gentleman, a stranger that he didn't recognize, stepped out of the bushes and started following Johnny. And then one of the people on the paper route
uh-huh.
will state that he was woken up by a car. So this Fairmont is going to come up a lot.
Okay.
I don't know that it was ever followed up on. I do know that Noreen was constantly fighting to try to get them to take Johnny's case seriously.
Yeah, do something. Do something.
He's still missing. We don't have answers. I cannot imagine what she's going through. She's not getting any help. The police are not bringing the FBI in.
Is this before or after Adam Walsh?
No, this was after.
Okay. This is after Adam Walsh. Wow. Do you hear that sound?
Yeah, what is that?
That is my husband working in the bathroom.
I thought you have water near you, and that sounded like a boat.
No, he's sawing.
Like a foghorn.
So, sorry, people. This episode, please be done. Nope.
So, remember, the FBI doesn't come in unless that local police tell them they need them.
True. So if they already said you got to wait 3 days, of course, their next call isn't going to be to the FBI.
And I think Noreen really got to them. She really got under their skin because she fucking held them accountable. And they don't like that.
Absolutely.
Her son is missing. She wants answers. It's your job to get her answers. You already made her wait 72 hours to start your investigation. You're not doing any searches.
Right. Like,
she literally is having to pair up with the media.
Oh, boy. My God. Okay, I'm going to try to mute it. So we can at least get your side, and I'll try to jump in.
Oh, that's a good idea.
Okay, so I'm going to mute, and then I'm just going to unmute and jump in. Okay.
She had to pair up with the media to get searches done, aerial searches, and she still had to pay $600 out of her own pocket. She was having
to do things. See, that's bullshit.
Yeah. She was having to do things that they should have been doing. Now, it would come out later on that the police chief, who said things like, I don't give a bleep
what
says.
What?
Yeah. He would say,
what? That. My son is missing and you took 3 days to do absolutely nothing and now you don't give a bleep of whatever?
On camera.
I want to punch somebody in the face. I will come down and karate chop you in the throat. How dare you? Here we go. Listen to this. Listen to this bullshit going on. Of all the fucking days.
Well, you didn't end up having to punch him in the face because he ended up having to resign.
Oh, good.
This dude was so corrupt. He was accused by his own men of drinking on the job.
Of course.
Of fixing tickets for friends and relatives.
Yeah.
Of getting in the middle of an investigation into one of his sons.
Oh, yeah, because that all tracks.
Quality family here. Oh, and for being a racist fuck.
Oh, well. That's just foundational.
Right. He didn't want to help, and Noreen was a thorn in his side because she wanted him to do what he was getting paid for.
Exactly. Instead of fixing tickets and being and drinking on the job.
The publicity that she brought in for her missing son helped shine a spotlight on him, and he did not like that.
Of course. Bit. I'm the star. How dare you? I'm running this.
So let's do a little bit of a timeline, because things happened that I think we need to talk about that are relevant. So in 1983, a woman in Oklahoma claimed a young boy ran up to her, asked her for help, and told her his name was John David Gosch. Before she could respond, two adult men grabbed him and dragged him away.
And was that, did she report that?
She did report that.
Okay.
She swears it was Johnny. It would be weird that someone would give his name, but not entirely unheard of, but also.
I mean, a kid running up to you and then somebody grabs the kid. That seems really, really suspicious, but.
It does. Well, two men.
Well, yeah. But would they have kept him that long? That just seems very strange.
On August 14th, 1984. Eugene Martin disappears while delivering papers in Des Moines.
Oh, my God.
In the early morning, none of his papers delivered. Last seen speaking to someone in a car. Police could find no connections between the two cases.
Are you kidding me? What the hell? No connection? What are they talking about? Yes, that's drywall going up in my bathroom that you hear while I'm being exasperated over this. It's ridiculous. No connection.
Around the same age, in the same area, early morning, no papers delivered, last seen speaking to someone in a car, no connection.
Couldn't possibly have anything to do with that other case.
Mm-mm.
So.
In 1985... a dollar bill surfaces with the message, I am alive, and the signature, Johnny Gosch.
That seems like torturous, like somebody playing a really, really cruel joke.
Like, it's not bad enough that they had the usual people coming out of the woodwork. They had a man claiming that he was part of a biker group and they had Johnny, and if they paid him the money,
of course,
he would deliver Johnny. Like, they're already having to deal with that.
Right.
Then shit like this happens. They can't confirm that it was Johnny who wrote on it. A woman received the bill at a grocery store in Sioux City.
Mm-hmm.
Now, depending on where you read about it,
mm-hmm.
you'll read that three handwriting experts confirmed it was Johnny, but
okay,
others didn't. So we still don't.
I feel like that's just something that people would do as a joke.
A very poor taste joke. Then on March 29th, 1986, 13-year-old Mark Warren disappears from Des Moines.
Oh, my God.
Mark was not a paperboy. That gets reported a lot, that he was a third paperboy. He was not.
Oh, okay.
But he was the same age, like in the same age range as Eugene Martin, as Johnny Gosch. Johnny yeah. Gosch was 82. Eugene Martin was 84. Mark Warren was 86.
Yeah.
2 years apart. So it's yeah. like we have someone in the area.
I mean, feel
not two police.
But yeah, but maybe somebody is stalking children. So that
young boys. He was going to hang out with friends and he never came home.
My God.
He was the only one, I think, that police might have looked at realistically as having mm-hmm. run away to begin with, but not run away, like never see his mom again, run from his mom to his dad's because he wanted to be with his brother and sister, but he never showed up there.
Wow. And
he was going to hang out with friends for pizza and a movie, and he never came home. And the reality from the beginning was he was never a runaway because he wouldn't have done that.
Right.
So we now have three boys in that area that police don't think is a connection.
And that they've all just run away, and that's that.
And the sad part, too, out of all three of these is that Johnny Gosch is the name that everyone knows mm-hmm. across this country. Eugene Martin appeared with him on the back of a milk carton. But people don't really know his name.
Uh-huh.
And unless you have researched Johnny Gosch or been obsessed with Johnny Gosch, you don't really hear the name Eugene Martin or associate it with that. And Mark Warren got maybe one article when
My goodness.
Single mother. It just.
Yeah. It's all. Yeah. I mean, clearly, I'm sure they blamed her. You didn't have a father in the house and this is what happens. And
again, Noreen was a force.
Yeah.
She was going to push and, mm-hmm. and a thorn in the police side. And because she learned early on
mm-hmm.
to pair herself with the media, Johnny got more attention.
More attention. Yeah.
Also because he was the first one, I think, to disappear in the area.
Mm-hmm.
In 1988, the Goshes get a letter in the mail from someone claiming to be Johnny.
I hate this stuff. I hate that.
It's typewritten.
Okay.
I'm already skeptical.
Yeah.
Also, like, low-key pissed because people are fucking sick. And who does this to the parents
right.
of a missing child?
This is so gross.
So in this typewritten letter, the person claiming to be Johnny says he was kidnapped. His hair color has been changed by his kidnappers, and he's being forced to do unspeakable things. He's
oh
also
God.
Been given a new name.
Okay.
This letter was signed, "Your son, Johnny Gosch."
That's weird.
Have you ever signed your last name in a letter to your parents?
Your daughter.
Like, your full name?
Dee Dee Lehner. No.
I think I maybe did it once to my mom when I was away at camp as a fucking joke. Like, I was being funny.
Yeah.
And in that same letter, I'm like, have you forgotten about me? I've been gone for a whole week. Your daughter. I did it as like a reminder. Your daughter, Jenny Hayes.
In case you've forgotten about me at sleepaway camp.
Right. Like that's when I did it. And it was a handwritten letter.
Exactly. Not a typewriter. Like, let me break out the whole, you know, I didn't even know Smith Corona. Is that a typewriter?
Yeah, that was a typewriter.
Oh my God.
I'm so proud of you.
I pulled that out. I was going to say Smith and Wesson and I'm like, nope.
That's a gun.
That's a gun.
So different.
Oh.
I just. So in his case, like, could I see him signing it that way? Maybe. It just seems weird in that kind of a situation.
Mm-hmm.
To be signing it that way. Given that at this point, he's been gone for 6 years.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe he didn't think they would remember him.
But that sounds like somebody playing a really cruel joke.
Yes. And now we're going to start down sort of a rabbit hole. We're not going too deep, at least not in this episode.
Okay.
In 1991, an inmate in Lincoln, Nebraska comes forward. Paul Bonacci says he helped abduct Johnny Gosch. Paul himself would have been around 15 at the time. He's a convicted sex offender with multiple personality disorder who claims he was with adults who kidnapped Johnny. And Paul is the one who held Johnny down and chloroformed him.
Okay.
That Johnny was targeted as part of a pedophile ring that was taking young boys and passing them around.
Now, I could see how you might get other children who have been abducted or in this situation luring other children in.
I can definitely see a predator doing that as someone in the neighborhood who does it.
Mm-hmm.
You want kids to feel safe around you. I think the hard part to grasp is that they're keeping these teenage or preteen boys alive.
Right.
Renaming them, taking them from state to state and passing them around. But this is Paul's story.
Mm-hmm.
And Noreen believes him.
Okay.
In 1993, the Goshes divorce. Unfortunately.
I can't imagine the toll that this has taken.
No. I can't imagine the toll it takes on a parent and the wedge it becomes in a relationship, because everyone grieves differently.
Mm-hmm.
And your levels of acceptance happen differently. And this is a case with no answers and a missing child who is still missing. So how do you grieve and find closure when you don't know what happened,
mm-hmm.
or that he is no longer out there? You don't know.
Right.
So if you have one parent who is resigning themselves to that and accepting it, and you have another parent who refuses to accept it, I wouldn't want to stay married to you.
To somebody who's given up. Yeah.
Right. If I believed that our son was still alive and still out there, I would not want to stay married to you because you are not being supportive of me and you're not being supportive of our child.
Right.
Now, on the flip side, if I have accepted that my son is gone and he is not coming back and I am likely not getting answers and it eats at me every day, so I need to, for my own mental health and self-preservation, let it go and say goodbye.
Right.
And close that door. Not close that door.
Not
memories,
right?
Never forget my son.
But the act of searching and looking and hoping and praying, at some point, you have to allow yourself to just grieve and say, he's gone, and try to pick up the pieces and move forward.
And I don't think that John Gosch has ever stopped looking in his own way. I just think there is a difference of opinions there on the fate of their son. And I think if you believe that your son is gone and is not coming back, it is probably very exhausting being married to a powerhouse force who continues to push and will not accept. And continues to throw themselves against that wall. I think it's got to probably be pretty exhausting. And I'm sure you may even point fingers at each other, or maybe not even that. Maybe look at things that you could have done differently and have your own. I mean, there's so much that you go through.
Mm-hmm.
I can't even imagine. I don't know how you survive that as a couple. So the Goshes divorced in 1993. We're not going to go in depth on Paul Bonacci's claims on this episode.
Okay.
If someone wants us to cover it in the future, it's a rabbit hole that we can definitely go down that has very different directions depending. We could even cover it in the very next episode. We'll see where this leads. But for now, we're going to... The thing that I will say, the reason that Paul Bonacci is going to continue coming up right now is because in 1999, his claims came to fruition in a case against a banker.
Oh, wow.
It was part of allegedly a pedophile sex trafficking ring that Paul claims did a lot of trauma to him. And somebody did do a lot of damage to Paul.
Mm-hmm.
There is trauma in him that is, it just is heartbreaking.
Wow. Okay.
But we're going to focus, the part of the trial we're focusing on is Noreen's testimony in this.
Okay.
So in 1999, the Paul Bonacci trial against Franklin happens.
Okay.
And Noreen Gosch takes the stand.
Mm-hmm.
The first question, of course, that she's, one of the first questions that she's asked is what year her son was kidnapped. And she says, September 5th, 1982. The next question is, and has he been located? And Noreen's answer is yes.
What?
And no.
What? What? Yes and no. What's she talking about?
No.
What's she talking about? What's she talking about? She said yes and no.
And no?
She said yes and no. He's found and not found.
And next week, we'll go into the rest of her testimony.
Yes and no.
At the time of his disappearance, Johnny Gosch was 5'7" and weighed 140 pounds. He had light brown hair and blue eyes, freckles, a gap in his front teeth, a birthmark on his left cheek, and a horseshoe-shaped scar on his tongue. If you have any tips, please contact the Iowa Division of Criminal Investigations Missing Person Information Clearinghouse. Boy, that's a mouthful. At 515-725-6036. And we will resume the case of Johnny Gosch next week, as well as go into the changes that happened thanks to Noreen Gosch and all of her pushing. And we will also talk about child sex trafficking and pedophilia and all of that stranger danger 80s.
Yep.
We'll touch on that a little bit as well.
All right. Cool.
So what's your happy news for the week?
My good thing is another podcast. And it is Rachel Maddow's latest endeavor called Ultra. And it is about a right-wing ultra-conservative group wanting to overthrow the U.S. government.
Well, that sounds very happy.
But it's not what you think. It's not January 6th. It's from 1940.
Oh, wow. That's fascinating.
Yes. So she released her first two episodes this past week. And I love listening to Rachel Maddow read and talk about just about anything. And I love that she's does these kind of historical political pieces. It's really, really very interesting in that it says that everything that we're experiencing now, it's happened before. This is nothing new. This is nothing new.
That's strangely.
And strangely comforting.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. It sounds weird to say that, but it's strangely comforting.
Like, oh, okay, so maybe we'll be able to get through it again. So anyway, it's really interesting. And how the religious right, ultra-conservative movement, got its claws into millions of people and told them that the government is bad and Nazism is good. Yeah, it was all during, you know, Hitler and World War II and people sympathetic with the Nazis.
Fascinating.
Yeah, so that was my good thing. What's yours? What's your good thing this week?
Mine is gel nail stickers.
How fun. I was looking at your nails and I thought, okay, so they've got like, she's got a little Halloween themed nails and there's little skeletons and it looks like Frankenstein stitches and
they're thinner than nail stickers. So they actually have a much better appearance. They're better for my nails than regular gel polishes. I went from having really strong nail beds to it just completely wore them.
Yeah.
But the best thing about these is when you cure them under the lamp, the last set lasted me 3 weeks.
Wow.
Yeah. And they just peel right off with no damage to your nail beds at all.
What brand do you know?
I have two or three. These ones are Dashing Diva Nails.
Okay.
And they're Halloween stickers.
They're so cute.
I absolutely adore them. So
you got to take a picture and put it on Twitter so people can see. Super cute.
Absolutely love them.
And on that note,
have a good week, listeners. Watch your back.
Stay safe. And drywall, man. Drywall.
Don't do it while your wife is broadcasting.
I mean, construction. Goodbye.
Almost hung up on you
again.
It's because to do the podcast I have to minimize you so that I can see my podcasting notes, so it's really tempting to just like
hit the red, that red
natural
button. Yeah, the red, like, yes,
instead of the stop recording.